Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Soybeans make new highs. The Minneapolis Grain Exchange finally finishes a day's trade not to limit up. And the Federal Reserve wants to talk ag. What does it all mean? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today are Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, and Mike Georgie of Allendale in Mahomet, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. The Minneapolis Grain Exchange March wheat went to a high this past week of $19.88 after expanding daily limits to $60.90 and finally $1.35. Is it all up and all done and pretty close to all over or not? And we'll start with you, Pete Manhart.
Well, they were stuck for many, many days. I think they went, I don't know how many days in a row where something was limit up or limit down. They were limit down on some stuff, too, when they raised up. But I don't know that it's over because of the tight supply of wheat and people still trying to bid up their cash at 20 to 21 and can't get the rest of it out of the farmer's hands. So I think it's close, but I don't think it's over yet.
Bill Mayer?
I guess I'd agree with that. I don't know that it's over yet. I think we have to go through that delivery process when we get into the March futures, and that's going to be kind of interesting. And, of course, when we look out there to the September wheat, even though it's only at 1095 or whatever, that's still going to have some effect, I think, on acres up in some of the northern plains.
Yeah, just as a reminder for spring wheat, September is the new crop month, so that's the month you have to watch for the new crop. And finally, your version of what happened there.
I'll have to agree with both guys on that. I don't know if it's over. I think the price, I think there's a lot of guys that wish they still had wheat to sell, but I think it's the supply is tight, and I think deliveries are going to make a big difference, too.
Mike Georgie, of course, is with Allendale. So let's take a look at the numbers in Chicago as opposed to the Minneapolis Grain Exchange. Wheat this week, a high of $11.53, a low at $9.80, and the March at $10.27.5, a settlement price down 65.5 cents from last week. July futures for the soft red winter wheat in Chicago at $9.37.5, down 46 cents. You know, Mr. Bernanke, chair of the Federal Reserve, wants to talk with the folks next week at USDA and the agribusiness professionals as they meet at the Outlook meeting. Is that a good or a bad sign? And do you think that he will do one of two things, talk about opening CRP up and limiting exports of wheat? What do you think?
Well, I don't think they're going to limit exports. I don't think that's even a possibility. I know they have a lot of end users that are wanting to see the CRP come about, but I think that's going to be questionable too, unless we have a disaster or some trouble getting the crops in this spring.
Where do you see acreage leveling out? USDA last week came out with some preliminary numbers. Those will probably change next week in their outlook, and then again when they give their final preliminary numbers and at the end of March. But how do you see the acreage battle in the United States coming out at least next week?
Well, they're talking about approximately 6 million less corn and 6 million more beans, and I can't remember the wheat number, but people that want to plant wheat up there can't find seed. I don't know if they'll try to go use bin run seed or what, but the problem right now for those wheat people up there is they really can't find seed. It's gone. There isn't any. I think that the bean prices over 13 for cash could easily shock some people with more bean acres than expected and less corn acres. I think demand is still the secret, and we have huge demand even at these prices, and I think that's what's going to determine it down the road, is how does the demand hold the prices up.
Let's take a look at those bean numbers. In fact, new contract highs this week. March corn or March soybeans, a high this week of $13.87, the low at $13.06.5, a settlement price 24¾ cents higher at $13.73¾, and the November at $13.17.5, up 13½ cents from a rather 32½ cents from the previous week. As you take a look at this marketplace, and we go through the month of February, we're setting insurance prices for both corn and for soybeans. What do farmers need to be considering on both old and new crop sales?
On the soybean side?
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I guess our approach here is that we're going to have a couple of more opportunities to price soybeans. We are actually in what we call a sell single right now, so we're wanting to get an increment done here. But I guess we feel like we ought to have about half of the beans that you want to sell, we ought to have priced on the new crop beans right now, and have another half that you're looking at two opportunities to price on. On the old crop beans, I guess I think that you're down to whatever you feel comfortable with holding into the growing season, and be in a position where if the market does drop, that's not going to affect you too adversely from an overall standpoint.
Tell me about using options with soybeans to protect price.
Soybeans are kind of tough, but we were just talking about this before the show a little bit. The price of put options are fairly expensive, but I think what you have to look at is the value that you're locking in. If you can lock in even a an $11 cash price, for example, and spend maybe 60 to 70 cents to do that, I think that's something you have to consider. There's some more innovative ways to come in and sell some options to take some of the cost away from that, but you really need to talk to your advisor on those strategies. I think just going in and buying a straight put option to put some floors in is a good way to go, but that floor is going to be fairly far below what the cash price of beans are right now.
What have you and your company been talking about in terms of option strategies as well for both corn and soybeans?
Well, I think it's what Bill was saying. I mean, we're saying buy the puts. Just buying puts on corn, I mean, guys can lock it anywhere from, $700 to some $1,000 an acre just by buying puts. And you can cheapen these up by selling an out-of-the-money call, which, could require margin if you do go a lot higher. But I think the thing you got to look at is the amount of dollars that you're protecting per acre that, we've seen beans down limit and we've seen corn down limit, but they've always come back. And that day may be where they don't come back, and you're going to wish that that 70 cents or 40 to 50 cents on an option for corn and beans is going to look pretty cheap.
Pete, how nervous are your customers that we're in these areas that we haven't been, ever for soybeans, I suppose, because we're in new contract highs, and corn that we haven't been really since 96. How nervous are they at these levels that things will drop out from underneath of them quickly?
I think they are nervous. I don't think they think they're going to drop out quickly. I think we have to talk to them about protecting these high prices. But they're very nervous, one, about the high prices and keeping them there because of the expenses being so high, especially on corn.
Did you, and any of you can answer this question, did you hear this week, and I think this is the first time I really started to hear this, in the week, this past week, because of what was happening in Minneapolis, much more talk about the political consequences of the high price of grain, whether it be oil seeds, wheat, or soybean, or corn. Have you heard that discussion very much, and does it bother you?
It bothers me because people think that corn and bean prices are the main reason for higher food prices. And I don't agree with that. I think the high energy prices are the reason that everything is higher, because it takes more energy to do everything. And if you look at the percentage of whatever, if you double the price of corn it doesn't make the price of that food item go that much higher.
I think there has been a lot more talk about that. I agree with you on that, Todd. It seems like it's hitting the news more. But if you listen to some of what Schaefer said, you know, the ag secretary, and you look at these baseline projections that they've got out here, I mean, it seems like there's a commitment, at least within the administration, to let the market work the details out here. How much political pressure they get on to change that attitude, I guess, is what we'll see. But I think that's one reason this outlook coming up next week here is pretty important.
I've heard some interesting numbers, Mike, about the nitrogen prices for next year, $7.30, $7.50, and continuing to go up. What are you hearing, and how does this play into what farmers are thinking, I suppose, about the not this year, but the following year even?
Well, I've heard as much as $1,000. And I've heard that, service places are not going to get in the nitrogen unless there's a producer that guarantees that he's going to buy it. I think the prices have to stay up here, just like everything else, the rent being higher, nitrogen being higher, and fuels being higher. I mean, the prices have to stay up here for the farmer to stay in business. And I don't know. I think he's kind of like a deer in the headlights. He likes these prices. He's afraid they're going to go up, and he don't want to spend money on puts or anything like this because he doesn't think it's going to fall out of bed. And I think that's why you need to talk to him and say that, yes, it could happen. And the thing is, too, 450 corn, you know, looks pretty sad right now compared to the prices we have at this time. So protecting it is definitely a thing that you got to look at.
Is there any concern within or about the ethanol industry with $5 corn for an extended period of time?
I've heard people talk about it, but I've also had people say that they are still making money, and as long as they have the profit potential to make money, that there isn't any problems. Now, we've heard that some have gone under or some plants have stopped, but there are still being plants being built, and we're still using it. I really think ethanol is here to stay for the near term. I don't think it's the total answer long term, but I really do think that it's going to continue to grow and be a major part.
If you look at the baseline projections, again, that came out this week, I think it's interesting that the government pretty much, in those at least, we'll see how they come out in the forum, but they were still pretty bullish on ethanol production, it looked to me like. And I just wanted to back up a minute, too, to the acres thing, because I think that was an important thing that came out here this week on the acres. I mean, there was in the eight major crops, they had about a 6 million acre increase in the 08 year there in total acres. And I think that's something that really we have to consider as we're looking at the supply and demand side of it, is how many acres are we going to pull into production that aren't in production the last couple of years?
Well, Darrell Good always says that there were about 3 million acres that USDA managed to lose somewhere along the line. So maybe they found half that amount, but the other half's got to be coming from somewhere. Where is it going to come from?
Well, I mean, if you look at wheat production, I mean, if you're south of I-80 and you got $10 wheat or $8 wheat, whatever, you probably, and $13 soybeans, you probably ought to, you know, double crop soybeans on those acres. I think you're going to see a huge increase in double crop soybeans, for example.
Let's take a look at some of the rest of the numbers as they finished up this week in Chicago. Corn futures, a high this week of $5.17. They're low at $4.91 and a quarter. A settlement price up 6 3/4 for the March at $5.14 3/4. December at $5.38. It finished 8 cents higher. The oat futures at $3.58 were up 8 cents. We may as well pick up the CME Group livestock while we're at it. February contract there at $92.90 high, a low at $90.72 and a half. A settlement price down 80 cents at $91.40. March feeders at $10.46 and a quarter cents, down 40 or $104.62 and a half cents, down 40 for the day. Lean hogs at $66.42 and a half. For the high, the low at $64 in April. That's a new lead at $64.20. They were up $6.12 and a half cents from last week. Okay, so tell me about Mike, where you see the corn market headed in the next week?
Well, I think the corn market has hit its top last week. We're kind of neutral to bearish to the corn, but I think the thing that holds everything up is the fact of tight supplies and good demand.
Anybody else believe that the top is in for the corn?
I think corn could still go. I think we tried to make a new top again, didn't quite do it. We haven't made new contract highs all time in the corn, but we got close to them. But I think the worry about acres and the huge demand are continuing to hold the corn up, and I think that worry about acres for next year is going to continue to hold corn up. They're in a range. I think we'll still see new highs without weather problems, but I don't know if they'll go very far without weather problems.
I think we'll see new highs. The question really is what come before or after the growing season starts.
All right. We'll talk more about the marketplace in just about 2 minutes with Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group. He's in Chicago, Illinois. You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of WILL, public radio from the University of Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Compared to the last few weeks, this week was relatively uneventful across most of Illinois. Temperatures this week were well below normal statewide, ranging from about 10 degrees below normal in the south to 20 degrees below normal in northwestern Illinois, where there is still a deep snow cover. For the most part, this was a dry week, which was most welcome in central Illinois, where they are still drying out from last week's heavy rain. The exception to the dry weather this week was far southern Illinois, where a winter storm deposited up to an inch of freezing rain and up to 6 inches of snow and sleet, creating messy winter conditions on Monday and Tuesday. At the midpoint of February, most locations in Illinois have already received more precipitation than typically received during the entire month. The weather will get interesting again this weekend as a storm system intensifies over Texas and then moves northeastward. Precipitation will be spreading across Illinois by late Saturday. Initially, it appears the precipitation will be rain, but will change to snow as cold air is pulled into the storm. Exactly who gets snow and who gets rain and how much will depend on the ultimate path this storm takes. Stay tuned to your local NOAA weather radio station for the latest information.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today for Commodity Week are Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Our guest is Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group in Chicago. With 25 years of experience at the Lynn Group, Roy is a principal of the firm and part of the management team, overseeing much of the company's day-to-day operations. He is the director of market research for all of Lynn Group's commodity sectors, authoring the Daily Grain Fundamental Wires. We appreciate you joining us, Roy. Thank you for being along for the ride today. Let's take a look at what you believe to be happening in the marketplace. And first, I'd like your view from Chicago, what's been happening at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange.
Well, Todd, I think it's very obvious that you've got an old-fashioned squeeze going on. You still had 7,000 open interest this morning, and you've only got about 2,300 contracts of deliverable wheat available, and wheat's tight. You've got Japan that continues to buy spring wheat. He's still got another 200,000 tons to buy, and we're running out. So we have to take some spring wheat away from domestic users to fill the export demand. And we're going to have to find a way to replace that. So you're going to see the same strength in Minneapolis March spread into the May and maybe spread into Kansas City. Now, I happen to think the wheat markets have topped out. I think they've done their job. But we've done this without any weather, Todd. You've put weather on this market in the springtime where you can't plant spring wheat or you put a late frost on the soft wheat or the hard wheat. This market can go bananas again. As far as corn and beans are concerned, I'd like to take a little different view. We're talking about wheat. I want to talk about people food. And when you come to corn, there's not a whole lot about people food and corn. But there's a market that's really doing some phenomenal things, and that's rapeseed. We're in the new contract highs, record all-time highs. soybean oil is not quite record all-time highs, but oil in the United States is relatively abundant, but it's tight around the rest of the world. And I think that's the next Minneapolis wheat. I could see soybean oil going to 62, 64 cents, rapeseed going to $880, and right now you're trading under 700.
Roy, Bill Mayer.
Hi, Bill.
How do you see the USDA coming out next week and making all this stuff balance here on this outlook for them when they try to look out to the future?
Well, they've got some pretty major accounting work to do. If you took the baseline projections and put the right S&D on it today, those projections were made in November, December. But if you put the right carryout on corn today, their crop projections would give you about an 850 or 875 million bushel carryout. And I think that's pretty tight. The question has to be, do they do something to release CRP acres? And the only thing, the only S&D that's tight enough to cause them to make some sort of a structural change in contracts and everything is wheat market. And we've got a record low carryout. We're going to be sweeping bin bottoms and everything but soft wheat by the end of the year. And your new Secretary of Agriculture is from North Dakota. But come on, why not? Well, we'll open up North Dakota, let them plant a little extra spring wheat.
So you think CRP will come back in then?
Well, I think it's one of the ways to fix our problem, and we've obviously got a problem.
They're going to have to act awful quickly if they do it.
Well, I know, and they keep acting like it's not a big deal. If you talk to the USDA or the Department of Agriculture, they're not concerned. They'll let price do its function, and we'll let some contracts expire, but they're not talking about letting anybody out of existing contracts, not yet.
This is Pete. You're talking about all this spring wheat and hard wheat. What does that have? What is that going to do to the soft wheat that we are going to have in the northern hemisphere of lots more acres? Is that going to really hold up well and make it go to new highs?
I hope not. It's my only short in the marketplace. And I'm not feeling really good about it because every time I've sold Chicago July wheat because of a 25 or 30% increase in winter wheat acres and soft wheat, it's kind of forced me out, you know. And after you lose 20 cents, 30 cents, 40 cents, 50 cents, three or four times, you kind of get not sure I want to sell it again. But here I am at the end of this week short Chicago July wheat again. So I hope you're right. I hope that the wheat market comes to realization that we're swimming in soft wheat and next year's carryout could be four times bigger than this year's carryout in soft wheat. We are... seeing domestic mills, well, Nabisco and Toledo took their truck bid to 100 under for new crop soft red wheat and 130 under July for spot wheat. So what is that, 235 under the March? Doesn't sound like they need any wheat, does it?
Roy, what do you think the risk or the concern or should there be concern as far as recession, both domestically and globally, economic recession?
Oh, you know, we've already started to slow down. You've seen ocean freight break really, really sharply. And I think that the concerns about runaway inflation in the rest of the world are a bigger deal than recession is. I think I saw some numbers out of China this week that their money supply was up 18% over last year. And that's how governments get themselves in trouble. They start printing money so that people can buy what they need and fund this big expansion in their economic machine. And it's all aimed at exports right now, but it's slowly coming back so that some of it's aimed at domestic use. But if there's a problem around the world, it's China slowing down. And that's what the freight market told us here 2 months ago.
Roy, do you think this market, the wheat, mainly the soybean and corn market, is going to take a correction here before the end of March when we do get our acreage numbers? Or you think we're going to stay here or even go higher?
I'm very bullish. I think that the wheat market that we've seen is just the beginning. I think that, as I said, oil and rapeseed could become the next Minneapolis wheat. I think corn goes to 560 and with just a hint of a problem in the springtime, trade $6. We need to grow out of this problem, and I don't know where we find enough acres to grow out the problem. When I was a kid in school, 19, 20 years old, I was told that the world population was going to outgrow our ability to grow food, and I think that that's starting to happen. In China, their crop sizes are the same size they were 5 or 6 years ago, but the per capita crop size is down by 15%. And it's not because the crops are smaller, it's because their population's bigger. Same thing's going on in India, same thing's going on in Indonesia. Now, the difference is that Indonesia is growing a lot of people, but they don't have any money. In China and in India, with this, India's GDP has been up 8% for 3 years in a row, and China's growing at a 10 or 11% clip. And these people want to eat like you and I do. We're not talking about the people that spend 40 or 50% of their disposable income on food. We're talking about people that have good jobs. They've moved to the cities, and their income is much higher than it was last year, and they don't want to eat rice anymore. They want to eat meat and vegetables.
Well, it sounds to me like that if this is truly the case, that the biofuels industry would be in a heap load of trouble over time.
Well, your assumption is that the grain markets run away from energy. Remember, the energy is part of what led us into this. And we talk about the Chinese people wanting to eat. This industrial expansion that's going on in China, their energy consumption is huge. This morning I was told that in Australia, one of the firms had declared force majeure on coal shipments. I said, why? What's going on in Australia that they can declare force majeure? That didn't make any sense to me. But I see an antiquated energy operation in Mexico. I see an antiquated energy operation in Eastern Europe. I see people like Chavez deciding that they're going to own all the oil fields and taking them away. And a lot of our energy supplies are controlled by what I would say are less than stable governments. So I'm very concerned about the energy market going up, and if that happens, maybe our industry can support a $5.50 or $6 corn price.
Roy, we appreciate you being with us today. Roy Huckabee is with the Lynn Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Now time for a final word from our in-house analyst. We'll start with you, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
Well, we're in historic times in price levels. We need to do something to keep those price levels coming to us, and we need to work at pricing things on a regular day basis.
Bill Mayer, Rochag Marketing.
I couldn't agree more, and I think what it really boils down to from a producer standpoint is that marketing, like a lot of things on the production side, is going to take a lot more attention than what it's taken in the past, and you really have to work at how you're going to accomplish that.
And Mike Georgie of Allendale.
I think all that's very true. We're protecting some good profits and some good revenues, and we've got to do something.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind. You can access this program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.